Hi, everyone. This is David Roy. I'm a pediatric orthopedic surgeon interested in the treatment of cerebral palsy. And I'm going to talk for a few minutes about an article we were fortunate enough to get published in Developmental Medicine and Child Neurology this year. I have been talking and teaching about symptomatic cervical spinal stenosis and spastic cerebral palsy for a few years, and I'd like to review with you the findings of our cross-sectional study. None of my disclosures are cogent to this research. So what's out there in the literature? Well, the most single most important paper is probably that of Harada et al. In 1996. They performed a cross-sectional radiographic comparison of 180 patients with athetoid CP and healthy controls. They did find that athetoid cerebral palsy patients were 8 times more likely to have disc degeneration, and they had they were more likely to have a listhetic instability, and there was a high association with canal narrowing in their patients. There's you can see from these charts that the cervical stenosis and generation was more common in both male and female athetoid patients than it was in the general population, and that they reached these peaks much higher at a much earlier age than the general population. All in all, the incidence of listhesis in CP was 6 times greater at C3-4 and 8 times greater at C4-5 than in the general population. There have been reports of spastic non-athetoid CP with CSS, but there's only a few, and a couple of those case reports involved patients with severe cognitive deficits who were nonverbal, and there was really insufficient information on patients with non-athetoid CP, and certainly not enough information to warn us to screen for this problem in our ambulatory CP patients. This is an illustrative case report. It's a 42-year-old with spastic CP, previously ambulatory and living independently. He sustained a fall 2 years before his examination with us and reported being unsteady a few months before that fall. He sustained, unfortunately, a dislocated patella when he fell. He was treated conservatively and became wheelchair dependent and developed flexion contractures. He reported new onset numbness in his right hand and dropping of objects, and he also began to experience bowel and bladder incontinence. Furthermore, he reported generalized increased spasticity throughout his body. So once he came to us, workup revealed on MRI, severe central stenosis at C4-5 and moderate stenosis at C5-6 and C6-C7. And one would assume that hearing this story and looking at the plain X-ray, that the MRI would be ordered. The patient underwent an anterior cervical discectomy infusion, and he did regain dexterity in the upper extremities and had decrease in spasticity. But despite undergoing botulinum toxin injections and physical therapy and surgery, he did not regain the ability to ambulate. And it's pretty clear to me that failure to recognize CSS led to this outcome. So we designed a cross-sectional study looking at consecutive patients between 2006 and 2016 from our cerebral palsy registry. The inclusion criteria were diagnosis of cerebral palsy and age greater than 18. There were 424 unique adult patients with CP. 32 of those, 7.5%, had documented symptomatic cervical spinal stenosis. And we note that the age was young, really quite younger than the general population. In the general population, patients over 70 are reported to have a higher risk for developing CSS, in contrast with our study cohort's mean age of 54.5 years. The CSS was not associated with GMFCS level, which is perhaps surprising in two ways. One is that one might anticipate that being ambulatory would predispose to CSS on one hand, and on the other hand, severity of involvement might predispose. But we were not able to discern that there was any real connection between GMFCS and the occurrence of CSS. The cervical spinal stenosis was not isolated to patients with aphthosis or dystonia, as suggested by the existing literature. We had plenty of patients with spastic CP who had CSS. Symptoms varied and can be significant by the time of diagnosis. If you consider upper extremity, lower extremity, incontinence, and neck pain as the four most likely symptomatic areas, you can see that half of them had neck pain, 70% had upper extremity involvement, 70% lower extremity involvement, 30% incontinence. And very few had all four, but there are a fair number that had concurrence of these symptoms. It's necessary to think of all these areas when you're suspicious of CSS. C5-6 was the most common level of stenosis, as it is in the general population. Neuroforaminal stenosis was also prevalent, and again, at the same levels that is most common in the general population. 41% have undergone, 41% of our patients have undergone some type of spine surgery for their symptoms, and the other 60% have either been referred to a spine surgeon for consultation and or are undergoing physical therapy and conservative treatment. So we looked at all these other associated symptoms, and there was some association with neurologic comorbidities, antidepressants and analgesics, anticonvulsive medications, antispasticity medications, and benzodiazepams medications, but there was no association with GMFCS level, sex, or cardiac, pulmonary, GI comorbidities. Cervical spinal stenosis is common in cerebral palsy patients. It's necessary to maintain a high index of suspicion to make this difficult diagnosis. Treatment is generally successful when the diagnosis is made on a timely basis and the treatment is successful. Do not assume decline in function of your CP patient is secondary to the cerebral palsy. Spastic cerebral palsy patients are just as likely to have CSS as the athetoid patient, and both are 8 times more likely to have CSS than the general population. Our future directions are to elucidate risk factors that lead to the development of cervical spinal stenosis and to identify the pathophysiology of the development of CSS. And we do propose new standard of care screening for patients with CP, including cervical x-ray for patients with spasticity over 50 years of age, regardless of presentation or symptoms, and cervical x-ray for patients with dyskinetic syndromes over 40 years of age, and basically a hair trigger for MRI screening whenever the patient's presentation, symptoms, complaints cannot be clearly explained by their CP. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening.